I'd like for every child to listen, hear every word I say. I want every teenager to almost memorize what I'm talking about tonight. This morning, I got a report that one of the couple, hey, but fella back in the back next to Gavine, you can talk when you leave, but don't talk in here. This morning, I got a note about some of you folks back there misbehaving, and I'm not kidding either. And I want you to listen. What I'm preaching about tonight is having enough character to listen while somebody's talking and enough character to behave in a public meeting along with many other things. But I want to talk to you on he that is unjust in the least shall be unjust also in much. The word least is a very interesting word in the Greek. It comes from two words, one which means less and one which means little. The word least means less than little. He that is unjust in less than little, it means the tiniest thing. He that is unjust in the tiniest thing is also unjust in much. The word unjust comes from two Greek words, one which means right, and the other which means the little letter a, which means no in the Greek, are all right or no right. So let's paraphrase it then, and let's put it this way. He that is not right in less than little will be not right in much, or is not right in much. Now, here's a startling statement. He that is unjust in the least is also unjust in much. Does not say will be guilty or may be guilty, but in being unjust in little things, you are unjust in big things, even if you never actually do an unjust deed that's big. Boys, listen to me. If you are unjust in a little thing, whether you ever commit a big crime or not, you're guilty of a big crime. Here's an amazing, startling truth in the Bible. For example, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, the law has said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto thee, whoso looketh after a woman to lust after her in his heart, committeth adultery with her already. So a man that watches a woman walk down the street and lusts after, he is guilty of the act. He is guilty of adultery. You see, he that is unjust in a little, or in the least, in less than nothing, is unjust in much. Didn't Jesus say, the law said, thou shalt not kill? But Jesus said, if you hold hatred in your heart toward someone, you are already guilty of murder. Yeah. Didn't say, here's what we like to say, if you have hatred in your heart, you may someday murder. You already have. Or if you boys read these Playboy magazines and look at these dirty pictures and lust after these females in these Playboy magazines, you better watch out. You may commit adultery someday. You already have. There is a divine law that is irrefutable. That if you are unjust in the smallest matter, you're guilty of being unjust in the largest matter. Now why? Here's why. Because you are governed by the same principles of the crook. A person that cheats on a test in school is governed by the same principles of a person that embezzles the government. Governor Kerner is no more guilty of being crooked than a person that cheats on a mathematics test at the high school. And the person that cheats on the test is as guilty of as big a crime. I mean, why? Because you're governed by the same principles. You want to get something without working for it. You want to cheat. You want to get something that's not yours. Take something from somebody else. And so you're governed by the same principle. And so our Lord said, he that is unjust in the less than little, in the less than little, is also unjust in much. It may be that you're afraid to be unjust in much. The man who is unjust in little may not be unjust in much because he's afraid he'll be disgraced publicly. The man who's unjust in little may not be unjust in much as far as we're concerned because he may be afraid he'll hurt his reputation, ruin his business. He may be afraid of punishment and consequently does not take his crime to its fulfillment. But in the mind of God, he is guilty of much. You think, for example, a fellow who does something, a little bitty thing crooked, here's a person who doesn't pay the paper boy. Or here's a person that goes to sleep on the job or doesn't work hard on the job and doesn't give a full day's work for full day's pay. You think he'd ever rob a bank? He probably won't rob a bank. But don't you think that the reason he doesn't rob it is because he doesn't want to be disgraced socially? Don't you think he's just as guilty as the fellow that robs a bank? Yes, he is. Why? He's governed with the same principles. The truth is, a fellow goes out and robs a bank might have more admirable qualities than a fellow that's scared to. The same principles govern the person that cheats on a test, that govern the person that embezzles money, and God says the cheater on a test is an embezzler of a lot of money. Don't forget that passage. He that is unjust in less than small is unjust in much. Let's follow the logic for a minute, if you would, please. Here's a person that would not kill because he does not want to hurt his reputation. He restrains himself for murder, but he hates. Is not hatred the seed of murder? Is not hatred... Look, you take an orange seed, and an orange, do you know they have the same ingredients? Same thing. Everything bears fruit after its own kind. You take an apple seed, has the same ingredients as an apple, because if you plant it, you'll get you another apple. Now, the seed is as much the fruit as the fruit. It's just not full grown yet, but has the same ingredients. Same ingredients. Consequently, here's a person who robs a bank. Here's a person that just doesn't tithe. A person that doesn't tithe is guilty of robbing a bank. He is guilty of armed robbery. He is guilty of thievery. He is guilty of stealing. He is guilty of embezzlement. He is guilty of every big crime you can imagine. Why? Because the same seed that causes a bank robbery causes a person not to give to God. Greed, selfishness, mercenary spirit, materialism. The man who robs the bank says, I'll take this for myself. It's not mine. I'll take it for myself. The person that does not tithe says, this is not mine, but I'll take it for myself. It's the same greed, the same spirit, the same principle. You take the person that's an embezzler. It's wrong to be an embezzler, but a person that cheats on a test, as I said a while ago, the same thing. You know what? A person, and I don't know why I'm on this so much, maybe it's because we have schools, but a person that'll look over and copy somebody else's paper will do something else if he can get by with it. And the person that does it is stealing, he's a thief, he's wasting his parents' money, he's dishonest, and I wouldn't trust him and let him borrow any money. He's crooked. I mean, a person that cheats on a test is crooked as a bank robber. Oh, you say, I can't see the same comparison. You don't have to, as long as God does. As long as God sees it, all you got to do is believe it. And God says, he that is unjust in less than small is unjust in much. The same person that steals a fur coat out of Evans Spurriers, the same seed that causes that, causes the person not to work hard on the job. The seed of a house of prostitution is a dirty magazine. Person reads the dirty magazine, has evil thoughts, he's guilty of prostitution or going to a house of prostitution. He's guilty of lewdness. He's guilty of the worst sin. Why? Because the seed has the same ingredients as the fruit. person that won't die for God is terrible. A person that won't stand for God at work is just as guilty. A person that robs the treasury of the United States government, goes to Fort Knox, or goes to the Federal Reserve Bank and robs the treasury, is not any more guilty than a person that cheats on his income tax. Same thing. The first person that robs the treasury thinks he can get by with it. I heard about a fellow who wrote a letter to Uncle Sam, Internal Revenue Department, and said, enclosed is $100. I can't sleep at night. I've got $100 enclosed. I just can't sleep at night. Take this $100 back income tax. And they put a P.S. If I still can't sleep at night, I'll send you some of the rest of what I owe you. But it's the same. It's the same principle. So the Lord said, "Okay." The Lord said, "A man that lusts after a woman is as guilty as if he committed the act. A man that cheats on his income tax is as guilty as a man that embezzles from the government. A man that robs God, doesn't tithe, is as guilty as a man that robs a bank. A person that hates God, deliver us from hatred." I can't understand why any Christian would hate another Christian. It's beyond my comprehension. But the person that hates, the same person that can't get along with somebody else, same person that holds bitterness in his heart, he's a murderer. Oh, you say, "Holy preacher, you're being a little rough." I didn't write it, girls. I didn't write it. God said, "He that is unjust in less than little is unjust in much." Again, it didn't say he may be unjust someday in much. It doesn't say it may grow to be unjust in much. It says he's already unjust in much. Let me just use a few little illustrations just for the sake of it. I'll tell you a few of my temptations. I stay in hotels a lot. Hotels and motels and motor hotels. I try to be thoughtful, if I can, of others. And if we have, let's suppose tomorrow I'll be speaking with John Rice and then Bill Harvey will be leading the singing and maybe we'll stay in the same hotel, I'm not sure. But if I go down to get a paper, I always get three papers. And I bring a paper to Dr. Rice, bring a paper to Bill Harvey. And ain't I wonderful? Did you ever see a nicer guy than me? But anyway, that is sometimes. This time I ask them to get me one while they're gone. But I'll bring a paper. Now, these paper machines, if you put a dime in a machine, it'll open. You can put it open. And you can get three papers. Huh? And that's what I want, is three papers. Huh? Anybody? Looks like you've been down that trail. You ever been there? You never have. You're the kind of guy that walks around the airport looking for somebody just finished one that's laid it down. I was up in Maryland the other day and I walked in to buy a paper and I said, "Do you have a paper?" She said, "Yes." I said, "If it's bad news, can I get my money back?" And she said, "Mister, I have no control over the news." Now, let me ask you a question. What do you do? What do you do? I was in a certain airport not long ago, went to the telephone booth to call the office and dictate a Sunday school lesson. I put a dime in the telephone and the buzzer didn't buzz. My dime was gone, wasted. So I shook the phone and the dime didn't come out. I didn't lose my temper. I got righteously indignant. Which means as mad as fire. And so I shook it and come out. And I hate something that steals my money. And so I just took my hand and wham! I hit the telephone and money began to come. I want you to know, dimes and nickels and quarters began to come and it came and it came. And there I was holding a handful of money. Now what am I supposed to do? I looked around. Nobody was on the left. I looked to the right. Nobody was on the right. I looked back. Nobody was behind me. There I was. Boy, I felt like I was in Las Vegas. Now, what you are comes out about right there. And I had the biggest, steak that night. No. But I tell you what, I wanted to. We used to have a little slogan in Texas, finders, keepers, losers, weepers. And I got thinking about how many dimes the telephone company robbed me out of. And I got thinking, you know, that's just about what I've lost. Huh? You been there? He that is unjust in the least shall be unjust, or is unjust in much. And so, being the sanctified, angelic, perfect creature that I am, I begrudgingly put every piece back in that thing and hated every minute of it. I was in East Texas Baptist College where I went to school. The senior, the final examination in Greek. Now, anybody knows that, that the happiest day in a preacher's life is the last day in Greek. Anybody knows that. I mean, when you get to Omega. And so it was the last day in Greek. There's a fellow beside me, I could call his name. He's a preacher, rather well known. And he was really on the borderline. I mean, if he flunked that test, he flunked Greek. He didn't get his degree. He's sitting right over here to my left and one seat back. And he knew I made A's and B's in Greek. And he said, "Jack, hey, Jack." I turned around and said, "What?" He said, "I need some help. I'm in trouble. Man, I won't graduate. And I haven't got half these things answered. Hey, Jack." I can still hear him. "He'll never preach for me. I'll never have him preach for me. Never. Why? He's a crook. Crooked. If I ever catch any of you students or find out you're cheating on tests, don't expect me to recommend you to a church. Why? You're crooked. You're crooked. And you preacher boys decide you want to cheat on Greek, and if anything in this world would be right to cheat on, it'd be Greek." I worked at J.C. Penney Company when I was in college. Fellow said, another student worked with me. He said, "Jack, I'll be gone a little while." I went back to the men's room. About 30 minutes later, found him sound asleep back in the back. I said, "Man, what's the matter? You sick?" "No, I'm just tired." He said, I said, "Well, man, that's not right." He said, "Well, the boss doesn't know I'm back here." He'd never preach for me. Never. Never. Listen. The Bible says that if he'll do that, he's stealing money from J.C. Penney Company. He's a thief. He is as guilty as if he got him a safe cracker and broke in the wee hours of the morning and cracked the safe and stole the money. Why? Because he's getting money for sleeping back in the back, and that's crooked. Young people, listen to me. That's crooked. He'll never preach for me. Never. Never. This preacher that was cheating at East Texas Baptist College, this ministerial student, he stole his diploma. If he went up into office, now he didn't get the answers from me. You know why? I didn't have them. It wasn't me that was dumb in school. It was that fellow in front of me. But anyway, he didn't get it from me. But he got himself. He said, "Hey, what's the fellow's name? Ed. Hey, Ed. I'm in trouble." And by the way, he got mad at me because I wouldn't give him the answers. And he passed. Now listen to me. If he had had come to the office and broken into office at night and got the diploma and forged the superintendent's signature and the president's signature and made out his own diploma and put it on his wall, he wouldn't have been any more crooked than he was for getting a diploma he didn't earn. He that is unjust in less than small things will be is unjust. Won't be, will be, not might be, not could be, not should be, not maybe. He is.
fellow down in Texas, one of my good friends, runs a used car lot. One day he sold my books too on the side. Had a little shelf of my books there behind his desk. One day he went out and the fellow offered him $200 more for a car than it was worth. And he said, "What's the price on the car?" And he raised the price $200. He knew it wasn't worth it. And so the fellow said, "Okay, I'll take it." And he knew he shouldn't. So he walked back in the office, got the paper out, sale of contract, got it out, said, "Sign here." But he had to get a pen. So turn around the desk behind him to get a pen, and there my book was, "Let's Hear Jack Hiles," and there I was staring right in the eye. He looked at me, picture on the book, looked around at the fella, said, sign here. He looked back at me, and I was still frowning. He said, "Fella, I'm going to cut that price $200. Then he turned around and cursed me because it's my fault. Then he decided he wouldn't sell my books anymore in the used car lot. Now, what am I saying? I'm saying that if we don't watch out in little matters, then we are guilty of big sins. When my dad died, he owed a lot of debts. And I wanted the Hiles name to be clear of financial blotches and marks. I got in the car. I drove from East Texas to Dallas, Texas. I went to Gordon's grocery store, where we traded when I was a little boy, 6, 5, 6, and 7 years of age, and found out how much my dad owed Gordon's grocery store. It owed the grocery store 15, 20 years, and I paid off every penny of it. I went right next door to Gordon's grocery store, to McSwiggin's grocery store. Remember that, Mother? Where are you, Mama? McSwiggin's. Remember that, McSwiggin's? Right next door. We only traded at McSwiggin's when we were too much in debt at Gordon's. And I went over to McSwiggin's, and I said, "My name's Hiles, Jack Hiles. My father's name was Willis Appy Hiles. Would you check and see what my father owes you?" He went way back in his records and couldn't find all of it. He just guessed at it, and I paid him what he thought my father owed him. I went up on Lancaster Avenue in Dallas, Texas, to a place, Smith's Place, on the corner of Fordham and Lancaster, and in Dallas, where I used to go and get coal oil, kerosene, for our coal oil lamps and lanterns and our coal oil stove, and put it on the handlebar of a bicycle and bring it back. Remember the little container that had a little wire thing over the top of it? And I went back to Smith's grocery store and said, "My name is Jack Hiles. My father's name was Willis Appy Hiles. He's dead, and I want to pay his debts." And they thought I was crazy, but I paid off every dime. As far as I know, my dad doesn't owe a living person one penny. And if I knew a debt my dad owed right now, I'd pay it off. Why? He that is unjust in less than small is unjust in much. Some of you folks have heard me tell this story. It's one of the greatest stories of the proof of salvation I've ever heard in my life. One day, Garland, Texas, we had a barber saved. His name was Al Herring. Al Herring was a big, husky fella, had a lot of hair, and white as could be, just as white as could be. Al Herring got saved one Sunday night. No, Sunday morning. And boy, he really got saved. Tough-looking guy. He must have been 65 or 70 years of age. But Al Herring didn't come to church the next Wednesday night. He didn't come to church the next Sunday morning. He didn't come to church the next Sunday night. He didn't come to church the next Wednesday night. He didn't come to church the next Sunday morning. He didn't come to church the next Sunday night. And on Monday night, we had a brotherhood meeting. We called it a brotherhood. It's a men's meeting. We sort of a little club of men. We met once a month and had a men's meeting. And back in the back, the auditorium, in walked Al Herring. He didn't stop. He kept on walking. He walked right down the aisle. He walked right up on the platform. He walked right where I was and said, "Brother," I said, "Preacher," and he said, "Reverend, could I say something?" And I said, "Yes, you can." He stood up, looked out, he owned a barbershop. He looked out and he said, "Gentlemen, I'm not much public speaker. In fact, I've never been to church much in my life. I'm a man almost 70, but I've hardly ever been to church in my life." But he said, "Man," he said, "I got saved 2 weeks ago yesterday morning. And I thought I'd better settle everything up. So I got in my car and took a trip. I went down to Brownwood, Texas." Brownwood's a town about 150 to 200 miles southeast of Dallas, where there's a Baptist college. He said, "I went down to Brownwood, Texas. He said, almost 30 years ago, our first baby was born in Brownwood, Texas. He said, I didn't pay the doctor. I didn't pay the hospital bill. I cheated him. Now he said, my boy, I take it back. I think his boy was almost 40. His name was Al Herring, Jr. He said, the hospital bill didn't pay, and the doctor bill didn't pay. And he said, I got saved. I want to be right. I want to make it right. He said, I drove all the way to Brownwood, Texas, looked up the doctor, looked up the hospital, had him look up the old bill, almost 40 years old, and I paid it. Then he said, I got in my car and drove to Abilene, Texas. Now, if you know anything about Texas, Abilene, Texas is, a couple hundred miles, I guess, or maybe 250 from Brownwood, Texas. Abilene is straight west of Dallas, and Brownwood is southwest of Dallas. Rather. Brownwood's southwest, mostly south. Abilene is straight west, a couple hundred miles from Dallas. I went to Abilene, Texas. He said, I paid off my next kid. Then he said, I went to the next hospital, paid off my next kid. And then his lips began to quiver and tears rolled down his cheeks. And he said, men, all my kids are paid for now. Now, I'll tell you what, to me, that's more proof of salvation than quitting your cigarettes. That's more proof a man's been saved. You folks at old debts tonight. You folks that owe long-standing debts and never have paid them, you're crooked. You're a sorry testimony to the grace of God and the salvation in Jesus Christ. Now, I know you'd rather hear a sermon on heaven, but you need a sermon on how to behave and how to live. Now, let me talk to you for a few minutes about what you ought to do about it. In the first place, you ought to work on small things. Work on small things. Young people, listen to me, and all of you, that young folks, by all means, listen to me. When I interview someone to teach in our schools, I check several things first. I don't care where they've been to college first. I don't care what degrees they have first. Somebody asked me this week out in Montana or Colorado, said, I understand that you at Howells Anderson College, you're trying to get all the PhDs you can. Well, I couldn't care less. I mean, I don't care if a fellow's got a PhD or a BA. I'm interested in what he is, not what kind of a tag he's got behind his name. Now, a PhD, that's well and good for me. But I've got more respect for a fellow's got a BA and is honest and obeys God and loves God, loves the Bible. And so I look at the shoes. Man wants shiny shoes, look out for him. When I say this, all the fellows on the platform begin to put their shoes underneath and all you start looking at their shoes. Look out for a man that won't shine his shoes. I heard a sermon one time on shine the back of your shoes too. I look at that. Little things. I look at the fellas. I say, look at it. You can almost see some of them. Breath. You heard about the fellow saw an old friend hadn't seen for a long time. He said, you remember me? He said, don't remember the face, but the breath is familiar. If I interview someone to teach in the school, I always get close enough to them to see if their breath smells okay. I've got in my pocket, and I use about 2 bottles of these a week, Listerine, breath, mint, breath freshener. And you'll see me any time we have an invitation, walking down those steps. Fellow said, what are you doing, taking vitamins? No. This is what you call carrot freshener. No, it's Listerine and breath freshener. Used to, before I started using this stuff, I carried mints in my pocket, right inside this pocket right here. And every time we had an invitation, I said, shall we stand and sing? And stuck the mint in my mouth. Why? A person that's not considerate enough of somebody else not to offend him, is so inconsiderate that he'll offend him with his breath, I don't want to teach him my young people. I get close enough to him to see if he's got B.O., that's body odor. No excuse for it. Man that won't bathe, use deodorant, not more considerate of somebody else. Of the night, I was back here Wednesday night before last, I walked in that hall. And young people, it's not funny. I walked in that hall. And it smelled awful. And I said, whichever one of you young ladies in this hall has body odor, you take a bath and use deodorant. Well, you say, well, how? That's a little thing. Michelangelo said, trifles make perfection, and perfection is no trifle. Little things are important.
If you want to be sure that you don't ever do something big that's wrong, don't you do something little that's wrong.
I check a man's beard. Now, I have one of those hard beards. It's hard to cover. But I have shaved 3 times today. And I was on CBS television on a nationwide telecast one time in New York City, Columbia Broadcasting System. A fellow said, I've got to make you up first. I said, what's it for? He said, to cover your beard. And he started making me up, and he made me up, and he packed that stuff on. He said, forget it. Scraped it all off. Said, get there in front of the camera. No use in covering that. You can't cover that thing. I said, I never have had a man on this television station before. But a fellow won't shave. I check and see a fellow shaved. I check a person's fingernails. There's one man that came to be recommended, came highly recommended to teach in our school. He came to be interviewed. And here's how he looked.
Get out, I want to show the sound.
And I didn't hire him. Man had legs that hairy, I'd have one working around here. No, I didn't hire him. You know why? I want a fellow who knows how to wear his socks. A fellow how to wear his socks is the one teaching my young people. Well, you say that's a little thing. I know what the Bible says. So he is unjust in less than little, he is unjust in much. Listen, a fellow who will not take care of the details will not take care of big matters either. And you watch a fellow. If he does not take care of the trifles, one of these days, he'll ruin your operation. I check to see if the clothes are pressed. Always do. I check his handshake. Always. Always shake a man's hand. Shook a fellow's hand last night in my study. I said, man, that's no way for a man to shake hands. Did you ever reach out and grab a person's hand? And it felt like one of these perch that washed up on shore over here on Lake Michigan. And you wanted to throw it back in. Listen, my mother took hours when I was a boy. Hours! And she'd say to me, son, shake my hand! And I'd shake it. She'd say, shake it hard! To this day, when I shake a lady's hand, sometimes I can hear it crack. Really. Because mother made me shake her hand so hard. He said, that's a little thing. I know, that's what the Lord says here. He said, he that is unjust in little things is unjust in much. I watch a person's eyes. Boy, if my mother ever taught me anything, it's, son, look at a person. Look at a person. Don't have shifty eyes. You ever talk to somebody that didn't look at you? Did you ever have a preacher preach to you and he preached to the corner? I can still recall a fellow. We used to have preached in our church and I was a little boy. He preached at the corner. Up here in the corner. I mean, he'd just look at the corner all the time. And I'll be honest with you, if he looked at some of you folks, he'd look at the corner up here, too. But except it's worse than a corner up there in the PA room than it is anywhere else. Just look at this corner over here. And you got the red light on up there. But, honestly, Mr. Walker, if I were a banker, and I dare say you check these things, too, when people come in and want to borrow some money, I check the way he looks at me. I check his handshake. I check his appearance. I check his posture. I check the way he walks. I check the way he sits. Some of you preacher boys that come to church, you bump down your feet. You like that church. One of these days, somebody's going to write me, and you're going to have a diploma from our school. They're going to say, we're looking for a pastor, and I'm going to think about you, and I'm going to see you slump down in the seat. Well, man, you go to church and somebody's trying to teach you something and preach something, you ought to be like a little bird with his mouth open, sitting up in your seat, waiting to get what the man of God has to say. That's a little thing. I know. Little things make big things. So many things. I check. If I were you, and I want to be sure I was not guilty of something big, I'd work on the small things. These are the proof. ask a question. You got a library book out? You haven't taken it back? You got a library book you took out of the library and you never have paid for it? Never taken it back? It's home in your library? Huh? I don't care if it's been 15 years. Pay for it or send it back. You're crooked. Something you got borrowed from somebody else? Huh? You got into my books? That's really why. I'm having a homecoming service. All my books to come home. You got a church song book at home? A piano bench? You're crooked. You got any hotel towels? I bet you got 85 bars of soap you stole off airplane restroom. I know you never have used it. About to be stacked up. Huh? We're taking one of these Canada trips one year, and we had a little meal, and I said, now, keep your forks. Keep your forks. 2 weeks later, Bob Van Gork came up and said, Preacher, what am I supposed to do with this fork? I said, what do you mean? He pulled out a fork. He said, you said keep it. He's got a whole set of that stuff in his... Huh? You know, honestly, if you want to never do anything that is terribly wicked, then you never do anything that is slightly wicked. Anything you got at home is not yours? They said back in the days of Sam Jones, when Sam Jones used to preach revival, it is said that across the entire town, folks would completely pay up debts. Why? It is said that in the belt department, was it belt department store, I think it was, in a certain town in East Texas, Sam Jones came there for revival. It is said that actually, the accounts, almost every account was settled. People went to the revival and found out it was a sin, a dirty sin, not to pay debts. And they came to pay their debts. It is said that you go to meat markets and you'd hear a butcher say to a lady, Lady, I owe you some money. He'd give her a lot of money. What for? He said, you bought my thumb 50 times. I've seen the day I'd like to just cut it off, take it home since I bought it. He said, for a year I've been pushing on the scale with my thumb. And he said, I've cheated you. I want to make it right. And that's what you ought to do. I mean, whatever you've got that's not yours, whatever you've stolen, whatever you've got dishonestly, make it right. That's New Testament Christianity. I've often said, I'm not worried about the members of First Baptist Church being the most beloved folks in Hammond. I don't want this old sin-cursed, nude, sensual playboy world to like our church necessarily. But I want them to respect us as being honest and decent and courteous and kind and just and right and pay our debts on time and have our word as good as our signature and our signature as good as our bond. Work on the small things. It's one reason why I've been picking on different folks in the church. But I've said to musicians time and time again, boy, the choir, the walk, the way the choir walks out, the way the choir holds a songbook, the way the choir stands, the way we walk out. I practice walking out here every week of this world. I practice my walk from right there to here. He said, I don't like the way you walk. You should have seen how I stumbled before I started practicing. Why? Nothing is unimportant. Nothing. Every little detail is important. Every detail. People often ask me if I use notes when I preach, and I say, no, I preach for cash only. But I do. I have notes. I have some of the things I'm going to say right in here tonight. Now, do you know, I've got 4 paper clips, and every paper clip is exactly at a 90-degree angle from the Bible. And if a paper clip gets like that, I change it like that. Time and time again, while you're praying, I go down and straighten this Lord's Supper table. Or if there's an 8 back there on that board, and the little round part of the eight's on the bottom and the big part's on the top. Bob, what do I do? Pick up the telephone, call you, and say, turn that eight around.
You say, man alive, you're swinging a net and swallowing a camel.
Tell you what you do. If you'll take care of that, the thing will never go to pot. If I were a custodian and I had one spot on the wall, I'd clean that spot. You won't have to have spring cleaning if you have cleaning all the time. Keep the floors up all the time like they ought to be, and it'll save you a lot of work once a year.
The little things are important things.
By the way, that's the difference usually between success and failure. Your walk. Announcements. Do you know that I choose the words that I'm going to use for the visitors before I walk in this auditorium every Sunday? I try to think of some other way. Let the visitors know how glad we are to have them, and I get ready to recognize them and plan for it. Why? It's God's business. I'm weary. Of God's business being run a slipshod way. Nothing, you young preacher, nothing ought to be run better than God's business ought to be run. Across this country, I say this, but I'm tired of fundamental churches being run a second-rate, sort of a slipshod way, and the liberal church run better than the fundamental church. I tell preachers across this country, I say, I'm tired of going to the liberal church to see what kind of building they have, and the piano is tuned perfectly. You go to the fundamental church, and you got three strings hanging out the back end. You go to the liberal church, and the choir, it sings beautifully. Go to the fundamental church, you got one draft dodger and two old codgers wing-dinging some little ditty. Go to the liberal church and you got clean restrooms. Go to the fundamental church, you got to use toilet tissue for hand towels. Or hand towels for toilet tissue. I've often said if I were a layman, I'd go to the fundamental church to preaching and the liberal church to the restroom. Ought not to be that way. God's church, God's work, fundamentalist work, Bible preaching work, God's business. Every little detail ought to be done right. Always right. Little drops of water, little grains of sand make the mighty ocean and the pleasant land. I go to the liberal church and meet the liberal preacher, and he uses his proper grammar. Go to the fundamental church, he splits his infinitives, dangles his gerunds, and hangs his participles. Something else I'd suggest to you besides working on the small things, and that is we ought to be more concerned about what you are than what you do. Don't be so much concerned about what you are known to be. Be concerned about what you are. I said this morning, if folks get mad at me when I preach, if I please the Master, that's all that matters. Folks, if they don't like me, if I please the Master, that's all that matters. If you can be what you ought to be, you'll do what you ought to do. We could just instill in our young people, it is not what you can do that counts, it's what you can be that counts. For if you are what you ought to be, you'll do what you ought to do. We have too much talent emphasis in our day. We have too many folks bragging on kids because they sing pretty solos. I don't believe in putting kids on the hearth or in front of the family and letting them sing, and then everybody claps, hey, you sing so well. Tell them to take the garbage out, and they say, yes, sir. Then clap while they take the garbage out. Amen. Clap for obedience, not performance. Clap for character, not for talent. Clap because a child is what he ought to be. Not because he does something that's cute or clever. He'll do what he ought to do if he is what he ought to be. You teach a child character. You instill integrity and discipline and principle in a child's life. He'll, under any given circumstance, do what he ought to do. Well, I can recall hour upon hour, I mean day upon day. I can recall sitting David down, his little bitty tyke, 2 and 3 years, and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, as long as he was a little bitty boy. And I'd say, David, if you got a bill due on the first of the month, then you pay it on the second, what are you? He'd say, a cook for one day. And that's what you are. I'd say, David, the bill's due on the first, and you can't pay it on the first. What are you supposed to do? He said, I'm supposed to go to the fellow that I owe and tell him I can't pay it now, but I figure out some way to pay it the best I can, and we'll have an agreement so we can both be satisfied. Where is Where's the old-fashioned integrity America used to have? I can recall when I was a younger preacher, I could go down to the bank, and time again, I've gone down to, see, the fundamental church used bad grammar. I have gone. If you knew any grammar, you'd know to laugh, but you thought it was okay. Meredith Plopper teaches me how to talk, and that's the reason. But I can recall going down to the bank when I was a young preacher and walking in and saying, Cleland Hughes, vice president of the bank. Church needs $10,000. He'd write me a check for $10,000 and say, have the fellows come in to sign it when you can. You don't do that now, do you? Can't do that anymore. I can recall those days. You know why? Folks had some integrity, had some decency, had some honesty. Next thing, not only work on what you are and not what you're known to be, but also work on character rather than personality. Now, I'm not being critical, but I'm really not overly impressed when a parent comes up and says, Johnny, shake hands with the preacher. Now, I'm not against that if you teach him 10,000 other things besides that. All right. Mrs. Clifton's grandson, when he's a little bitty tyke, out in California. We got in the car, the Morans, what's his first name? John Moran and Sue met me at the airport, and they were so proud of the little boy, and they ought to be proud of him. He's a cute kid. And so we're going back in the airport, and so Sue said, what's his first name? Richard. Said, Richard. Brother Howe said, Richard says yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. And she said, Richard? He said, ma'am. She said, you say yes, sir, and no, sir. I said, boy, isn't that wonderful? I said, Richard, is that right? He said, yeah. Now, all that's fine. That's what I'd do if I were you. I'd let my boy, when he's about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, borrow about a dollar from me with a payment of a dime a week back. And tell him when it's due. And make him learn when he's a little child and make his debts and pay them on time. I've told my people this. You've been here a while. My Uncle Harvey, one of the best friends I ever had in the world. Uncle Harvey was a millionaire, multimillionaire. When I went to college, he helped me get a car. Now, he never gave me a lot of money. He tried to give me a lot of money, and I wouldn't take it. But he helped me get a car. I got a Dodge. 1941 Dodge. This is about 1947 when I went to East Texas Baptist College. And so I got me a 1941 Dodge. And Uncle Harvey said, I'll make the first three payments for you. And then you take the payments up yourself. Time came for the first payment I was supposed to make. And the 10th of the month, I just thought well, I'll pay it when I can. Uncle Harvey's my friend. He loves me. He's made the first three payments. 2 or 3 days after the payment was due, I got a letter from Uncle Harvey. Didn't say, Dear Jack, said, Dear Sir. Well, I thought, what's wrong with Uncle Harvey? He loves me. He said, we're starting foreclosure on the car. I thought, good night. He loves me. He wrote me the most terse letter. Why, like a businessman would write someone that hadn't made a payment. And I went to see him, and I said, Uncle Harvey, are you mad? He said, no, I'm not mad. I said, I thought you'd love me. He said, I do. That's why you got the letter. Now, he said, young man, you listen to me. I'll give you something. When I give it to you, you'll know I give it to you. But when you pay me something, you pay it, or I'm getting it back. He taught me a lesson. Hey, fellas, he taught me a lesson. Little things. That's why I say, hey, fellas. Listen, a fella who will sit in church and misbehave will burn down a building someday with a bunch of hippies if you don't curb him while there's time. Now, he'll do it. You know, one of the tragic things about this generation is we lack personality more than we lack character. When you say, she's a sweet person, what do you mean? Huh? Isn't she sweet? What do you mean? Do you mean she pays her debts on time? Huh? You mean that she doesn't rob God? Doesn't tithe? Or tithe? Huh? What do you mean? You mean she's honest? No, you don't mean that. You mean she has a sweet smile and a breathy voice. You're not sweet because you're not sweet. Sweetness and goodness is not personality. It's character. And what this country is desperate for is old-fashioned integrity and honor and decency and character again. You're unjust and less than small. You are unjust in much. And I say this also, chasten your children for character faults rather than mistakes. Child stumbles, breaks a vase, and you knock the fire out of him. He doesn't clean up his room, and you just holler at him. Listen, if you've got a rule that the room's supposed to be cleaned up, and that room isn't cleaned up, shoot. Do you know what? When I was a boy, now I didn't have a room. Well, we had a room. There was a kitchen, living room, dining room, sort of these one deal and all. But you know, whenever I got to where I slept in a bed by myself, I had to make up my own bed. And did you know to this day, when I stay in a hotel, Doc, when I stay in a hotel, I cannot leave the room untidy. Well, listen, if my mother used to say to me, she said, son, if you don't eat those britches, I'll break your leg. Then you won't need to wear britches. Britches is a Greek word, means trousers. Hang up your clothes. Very idea of a generation of heathen kids that live like hogs in a hog pen. Don't even hang up their clothes in their room. When I'm in a motel, I hang up. Listen. When I go to a motel, first thing I do is unpack and hang up everything right where it ought to be. When I dress to go out in the morning, I hang up everything. I get the papers. I fold them all up. Why? Because I was taught to take care of things. Chasing a child for cheating, lying, loafing, disobedience. By the way, let me tell you something. I know I wrote it. I know you think I'm cocky. I'm not. But you read How to Rear Children at least twice every year if you've got kids. 2/3 of all the counseling I do in my office about children's problems would be corrected if you would read that book. Just keep reading it all the time. How to Rear Children. 2/3. Save your time, save my time. Save your kids' lives. Save their futures. Read it. That's what I wrote it for. Read it. Constantly. Ask your question. I'm going to be through. You got any unpaid debts tonight? House publications. Mrs. Nischick, Mrs. Bewley, Mrs. Judy Anderson can tell you this is true. We bill people all across the country for books. Bill them. We got a payment. How old was that? 1968. We got a payment this week from a preacher that has owed Howell Publications money since 1968. 5 years, and the agreement is he'll pay within a month or two. Since 1968, 5 years, he's owed Howell Publications money. We lose every year, Mrs. Beauty. What? Accounts payable for last year. What do we have? You know, seems like to me that we just wrote off some bad debts for $6,000, wasn't it, for 1 year? Just the other day, we just wrote them off. Gave up on it. $6,000 for 1 year. We never got the money for. Those are preachers, deacons, Sunday school teachers. As they used to say where I came from, you're as crooked as a dog's hind leg. Well, you say, I just can't make the payments, then don't make the debt. I'll say this. This monthly payment thing is just about to ruin this nation. You'd be better off if you didn't have that washing machine for a while and use a washateria. Better off if you didn't you didn't have a television to get the news with and go down to some lady's sewing circle. Honesty. He that is unjust in little is unjust in much. Ask a question. You owe any debts? Huh? You're crooked. Unpaid debts? Huh? Ask your question, kids. Been cheating on tests? Huh? Been stealing? Robbing? Huh? You're crooked. Yeah, you're crooked. If you don't watch out, one of these days you're going to do something that'll wreck your life and wreck everybody's life around you. You're crooked. Ask your question. Have any tithe in your pocket? Any of God's money? Are you a tither? Are you a God robber? How about your income tax? How about the toll road? Huh? I came in from late, about 2 o'clock one night from South Bend, Indiana. I'll take it back. It's coming this direction. It's coming from Rock Island, Illinois. Got the last toll. It was 35 cents then. I had 34 cents. It was wee hours of the morning. About 2 o'clock in the morning. Had 34 cents. That's all I had. Didn't have a dollar. Didn't have a dime. Didn't have anything. 34 cents. I dropped 34 cents in. And took off. That's all I could do. At this place where I stopped, nobody there. Went home. Tried to sleep. Couldn't sleep. Crawled out of bed. Got a penny. Put my overcoat on over my pajamas. That's Southern for pajamas. No, not pajamas. What do Yankees say?
Pajamas.
Isn't that a stupid way to say pajamas? They a perfectly good word like jammers. They call pajamas. But put my coat on over my pajamas. Over my sleeping garb. When I got in the car and drove back over and dropped that penny in the little slot. Then had to pay 35 cents to get back through it again. Little thing. I sign my signature sometimes. I sign it in Bibles often. I sign it Jack Hiles, Daniel 12:3. I have a problem on that last S, that S on Hiles. Sometimes it doesn't come out just right. If it doesn't come out just right, sometimes I'll stop a person 30 minutes later after church and say, hey, bring your Bible back here. I want to finish that S. Little things. How about your debts? You got a diploma that you didn't earn? Huh? You said, Hiles, I graduated from high school and I cheated all the way through high school. What can I do? Go back and get every book you ever took, every course you ever took. Read the book over again. Learn it. And learn what you got. That's what Christianity needs. A certain man came to me the other day and said one of Hiles Anderson College students got a job out where he worked. Wasn't decent. He went out and the same fellow said, we have some other Hiles Anderson students who want to work. He said, don't send me any more Hiles Anderson students. You know why? Because somebody's crooked. Somebody's dishonest. Somebody's a crook. Somebody's a thief. Listen. I'd 10,000 times rather send out students that are honest and work hard than a bunch of five-better Kappas that are crooked. I'm a lot more concerned about your integrity and character than I am whether you made a straight A or not. By the way, if you can make an A, make it. If you can't make an A, make what you can. Work at it. When you've done your best, that's what I'm concerned about.